If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's September 10th, 1897, and another remarkable event is about to be uncovered by Ariel, Rebecca, and Ollie, the Retrospectors.
So it was on this day that a 25-year-old London taxi driver named George Smith became the first person ever arrested for drunk driving after slamming his cab into a building, for which he was fined 20 shillings, which would be worth about £130 in today's money.
But not banned from the road?
Nope. Actually, that wasn't part of his penalty. He just had to pay up and then they let him go home.
God, it's like Dubai, isn't it? Do what you want. Just pay us off. Yeah. It's fine.
And he was very unlucky, I think, because this was after a cheeky Thursday night session, presumably, because this happened just before 1 a.m. on Friday morning. And unfortunately, a police constable happened to notice that he was driving erratically down the street. And I imagine that being...
No, Rebecca, what? He was a cab driver. I mean, everything you've just said in 1897 would make sense if he did almost any other occupation. But he's a professional driver.
I don't think...
No,
there was nobody.
You can't just go for a cheeky Thursday.
There was nobody on board. He was the only person on board, and he was not injured because the vehicle had a top speed of 12 miles per hour, which I think probably helped.
I was going to say, was
helped.
It pulled by horse in 1897?
No, this was an electric cab.
Yeah, it was an electric cab, and they were very strange looking. It's not mentioned in the reports, but it was probably a Bursey electric cab, which had gone into service amid great fanfare just a few weeks earlier. They weighed 2 tons, nearly half of which was the batteries that were slung underneath, and would later kind of be the undoing of the cabs. So they only lasted for 2 years because they had these enormous batteries. They basically needed to generate their own electricity to power them, and they broke constantly.
Yeah, it's essentially a milk float you're describing being used as a cab.
They looked exactly like, if you picture a carriage, they were basically a horseless carriage, you know, with a box on the front for the driver to sit on. So, I mean, he was lucky that they could only go 12 miles per hour, because the safety measures, if you could crash into a building on one, probably weren't going to do very much for you.
I mean, it's funny that you mention speed, because the first thing that he says to the police officer, as reported by the Morning Post in its piece about this event, is that he tried to say, officer, how fast was I going? And the constable says, you were going 8 miles an hour. And he's like, well, I couldn't have been going that fast because I was going uphill, and this thing has a top speed that is much less than that when you're going uphill. And it takes the prosecutor saying, listen, mate, you're not being nicked because you were driving too fast. It's because you were drunk.
And then he says, well, I couldn't have been drunk.
I thought it was great that in this first report ever, he's starting a classic speeding court conversation where he says,
yeah,
no, he's like, I couldn't have been going that fast. No, yeah. I was doing 6 miles per hour at the most, Your Honor.
He also says, interestingly, he says, it's the first time I've been drunk in charge of a cab. And the prosecutor then looks down the list of convictions sent from Scotland Yard and he says, well, that may be the case, but you have actually been charged in the past with being drunk. And he's like, yes, but not while I was in charge of a cab. So it's got so many elements of what, like, as you say, like, historically has gone on to be the way that people dispute the charges that are given to them in cars.
And it's worth mentioning as well that this wasn't just any building he crashed into. It was 165 New Bond Street, which is now a branch of Givenchy. But at the time, it was the home of the celebrated actor and Lyceum Theatre manager, Sir Henry Irving, who we mentioned in our Dracula episode.
No way.
So he was, you know, crashing into a celebrity's house. So that probably did cause a bit more attention to the story. Although apparently he only caused some minor damage to a water pipe. Again, 2 tons, but only travelling at 6 miles per hour.
Yeah.
How did they determine that he was drunk, though? Because it's one thing to witness that he was, and for that obviously circumstantially to be the reason for the crash. But in my understanding, it wasn't until 1936... that there was any kind of breathalyzer that they could have tested him with, which, by the way, if you're a fan of on-the-nose names, was called the drunkometer.
Sounds like something you'd use at a fun fair.
You're absolutely right to ask the question, though, Ollie, because I think that he got very unlucky in having been witnessed by this constable in the first place. But also, when they took him to Vine Street Police Station, they said, "You're drunk." And he said, "I'm not drunk." And so they had to call for the divisional surgeon, who came down and he said, "Actually, you are drunk." So even though they didn't have a drunkometer or whatever sort of device to test it, they actually did have, you know, some sort of protocol, but it was just someone to turn up and go, yeah, you're smashed, mate.
And unhelpfully for his case, Smith in court admitted having, quote, 2 or 3 glasses of beer. I mean, to be fair, you know, there wasn't really a precedent for this kind of case, so Smith may not have understood that he was essentially just outright confessing to drunk driving, which had been a crime since 1872. Drunk driving of any form of transportation had been made illegal. It was also illegal to be drunk in charge of cattle.
Well, they go at the same speed.
Yeah, true.
It turns out that shame was a bigger motivating factor than criminal law here in Britain to actually reduce road deaths from drink driving. So they've fallen from 1,640 in 1967 to 230 in 2012. So it was the first anti-drink drive campaign that was screened in Britain in November 1964 that was responsible, campaigners argue, for that statistic falling. It was that people felt embarrassed.
The other thing that might account for that massive fall was that 1967 was also the introduction of the breathalyzer. So this was the point at which your blood alcohol level could actually be properly verified and at the roadside. So yeah, I think that might have also played into it.
Yeah, because it must have been extremely difficult to secure convictions for drink driving, because you obviously, by the time you get to court, you've presumably sobered up, and then it's really just, you know, the word of the arresting officer against the defendant.
And apparently women gave up drink driving more slowly than men, which I find interesting, but they reckon that's because it's more likely that women would be the designated driver and perhaps would be only slightly over the limit, you know, as opposed to men who would get trashed.
Yeah, and there probably wasn't a good understanding until relatively recent decades of the different impact that alcohol has on men and women in general. It would be easy enough for a woman to think, well, I've only had 2 glasses, my husband's had 4, so I better drive, not realizing that obviously, you know, on the whole, women have a lower alcohol tolerance.
Yeah, well, there's also this business about drinking still affecting your driving the following morning, which I only really got my head around about 10 years ago. Like, if you've been out the night before, you're supposed to allow 14 hours for 4 pints of beer to clear your system. Wow. I think how many parties I went to as a student where I drove the next day just assuming I was
fine. Don't you think it goes to show, as you were saying, the impact of the shame? But the shame is only on doing one specific thing. So that's driving immediately after you've consumed alcohol. And I think the UK has probably one of the stronger anti-drink driving cultures. And yet, how many times have we all just not thinking anything of it, just hopped in the car with someone who's literally shaking and pale? They're having to stop the car to throw up because they're so hungover. Yeah. But we don't think
on their way to get the fried breakfast that's somehow going to cure them of this alcoholism.
But we don't think anything of it because the shame hasn't been directed at that specific practice, even though we're still in danger.
I wanted to find some of the best excuses that have been offered for drunk driving. And immediately the article that sprung up among the top Google results was from Somerset Live, which was rounding up just the most ridiculous and hilarious excuses that have been offered in Somerset, including one Somerset man who said,
"Do the accent."
I can't, so maybe I should forward these over to you to join in. But yeah, you know, this guy said, "I started drinking after I crashed." Another person said, "I'd only drunk this whiskey because it helped my toothache." But my favorite one was someone who said, "An octopus was in the way." And this Devon man had apparently taken a cocktail of 10 drugs, which kind of explains the bizarreness of that excuse.
Actually, the toothache thing is almost a legitimate excuse, though, isn't it? I mean, this is one of the reasons why, when people say, why don't we have a complete zero tolerance to drinking and driving? Why do we have a limit at all? Campaigners, even road safety campaigners, say, well, you have to have, I think it's 20 milligrams as a limit, not zero, because 20 milligrams could theoretically be reached by, for example, eating a few too many chocolate liqueurs or using mouthwash.
Right.
I mean, you just really don't think about that, do you? But if you did a breathalyzer test after you just freshened your breath, you could show up as having drunk driven.
I don't know how you're using mouthwash, Ollie Man.
It's my go-to, a Listerine shandy. Don't start a Friday without it.
Sydney, my hometown, seems to have tackled the problem by making the rules so arcane that you could only possibly understand them when you're stone-cold sober. So, for example, it's illegal to serve shots after midnight. It's illegal also to serve alcohol in a glass after midnight. You can't serve four drinks at one time.
What's the relevance after what's midnight?
The glass? What's the glass thing?
You get drunk in a mug?
I don't know. I wonder if it's so that you can still sell takeaways, so you can send
to drink in your car
on their way.
Sorry, mate, I can't give you a glass. Take this bottle of vodka with you. Have a great night.
That's about as good as my Somersetian accent. You also can't serve more than two drinks per person after 3 a.m. So,
yeah, so much maths.
Wrap your head around that.
Yeah, that's right. It's like a game show, isn't it?
Is this what they do in Australian school maths classes, Arian? You're like, you and Bruce have had two glasses of vodka at 1 a.m.
You're travelling down New Bond Street at 6 to 8 miles per hour.
Next time.
You Belong With Me by Taylor Swift, which I had never heard before. 1.2 billion views.
Oh, my God.
Love the show? Support the show. Patreon.com/retrospectors. Part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.